And so part of my work has been to build a framework around how to build an ethical, sustainable, and impactful business. And it looks at things like how you can change your articles of association to consider your impact on people and planet. Because if you read your standard articles of association, all it cares about is shareholder wealth maximization. So what we can do is either change our own articles or we can support the Better Business Act, which is calling for that change.
You're listening to the Bookkeepers Podcast, sponsored by Xero.
I use Xero's accounting and bookkeeping software to manage my clients' accounts, and I love it. If you haven't tried it yet, head over to Xero.com with an X, and you can either start a free 30-day trial or sign up to Xero's partner program to join their amazing community of forward-thinking accountants and bookkeepers.
Hi, and welcome to the Bookkeepers Podcast. I'm Zoe Whitman. I'm here with Joe Wood, and we're joined by Scott Johnson from Kung Fu Accounting. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. That 30 seconds is just long enough to get you really nervous, isn't it?
It sure is, and it's very, very pink.
Yeah.
Scott, thank you so much for joining us today. Do you want to tell us a little bit about you and who you are and who you help?
Yeah. So the best place to begin, I guess, is today. I am a business owner. I run an accounting firm. I like to call it a boutique accounting firm, but that's just a posh way of saying niche, I guess. We do bookkeeping. We do accounts. We do payroll. It's January, so we're doing tax returns right now. We do all the things that you would be expected to get from an accounting firm. My journey to this point, though, is quite an interesting one. So I'm just going to talk, if that's all right, and then you can tell me. Yeah, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So 10 years ago, by the way, the story starts off, it's quite emotional for me. And yeah, so it's quite personal as well. But I'm happy to share it with the internet because I've shared it before. So about 10 years ago, I found out that my body produced suboptimal semen. I couldn't do the one thing that, well, men are supposed to do two things, right? Win the bread and bring the thunder. And I couldn't bring the thunder. And that was quite a challenge for me. It kind of rocked my identity a bit. Like my wife and I had plans for a family. We had all these things lined up, and it was quite heavily dependent on me being able to do what I was supposed to do. And I couldn't do that. So I went kind of on the beginnings of a journey at that point. We kind of came to a decision, my wife and I, that we were still going to try. And God had decided that he wasn't going to let me have children, but we thought science might. So science, we tried IVF, and the first round didn't work. Then in the second round, something went wrong with one of the procedures. And my wife was 24 hours away from permanent organ failure, and she was 48 hours away from death. She was septic from the inside. Something had gone wrong in one of the procedures. Long story short, there was a kind of clinical negligence. It was a big court case and blah, 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 blah. That's dismissing it. Like, I don't mean to say blah, 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 blah. It was a really, really tough time for us both. And those two things happening quite closely together were, in my mind, linked. Like, my job as a man was to do this thing with my wife, and we were supposed to make children, and I couldn't do it. And then the second option, the way that we were then going to have children, was through science, and my inability, my lack, if you like, risked her life. And so you did warn me not to swear, so I'm not going to swear, but I was screwed up by that. It was a really challenging time. And I questioned everything at that point. I questioned why I was here. What was the point of me as a man? What was the point of life, the universe? Why do we give our children milk from another mammal? That's weird. Why is that free in schools? Why do I spend an hour to drive 14 miles to get to work? Why don't we collect rainwater and use it to flush our toilets instead of using drinking water? Like, literally everything was under my microscope at that point. And I was just questioning absolutely everything. And then my attention turned to work and purpose and impact and meaning. And I wasn't getting any of that. I was leaving the house early. I was getting home late. I had a great job in a prestigious firm, and there was a career path to the top of the pyramid. And I didn't, at that, like, after everything that I'd been through in that kind of year and a half window, I just didn't want it anymore. It wasn't for me. So I professionally, I it took me a year to pluck up the courage, but I left my job. I then started Kung Fu Accounting from my kitchen table after a conversation with somebody in a coffee shop in Stroud in town. And I used all my savings, and it got to about this time of year, actually. And I thought, so about 4 or 5 months in, I hadn't really won any new clients. I was doing bits and pieces of work with connections and previous people that I knew from a past life, but it wasn't really much. And my savings were going down, and it got to my first self-assessment period. And I was like, I've got to go all in here. I've got to do something. I've got to make this work, because otherwise I'm going to have to go and find a job. And I don't really want to find another job. So that's when things started to change for me and the company. Alongside that, at home, my wife and I knew that we wanted to be parents. We knew that we had love to give. Maybe we have less love now, but I'll come to that in a second. So we went through the process of becoming approved foster carers and approved adopters. And our first child came along. I don't know why I said child. That's interesting. Son. He's our son. He moved in. We met him when he was 4 days old. He moved in. The very first thing he did was be sick on my mother-in-law, which I love. So he is now, that's it. He's just golden child. Can do no wrong. So he moved in, and then we were his foster carers for a year, and then we adopted him. At that time, we were one of the only approved what's called early permanence carers. So we were foster carers with a view that we would go on to adopt. And that's what we did with number one son. So I can't have children. In my brain, I nearly killed my wife. I started a business. I left my safe, secure job. And then we go through the whole rigmarole. And for anyone who's been there through that approval process for fostering and adoption, you'll know that it's really intrusive, really invasive. They had loads of questions about why I'd given up my job, about our mental health. It's really, really intrusive. I understand why they have to do it. You can't just give a kid to anyone, although kind of God does. You don't have to do any courses to become a parent naturally. So I've lost the thread. Sorry. I'll find it again. So yeah, so we've got all of this stuff going on at home and at work, and it was a lot. And then the pandemic happened. And at the same time as the pandemic happening, we were applying to become foster carers and adoptive parents again. And we found out just before Christmas 2019 that somebody was going to be born and probably needed somewhere to go. March 2020 came along and everything stopped or changed. And then number two son had been born and was going through that process in his own foster home. He moved in with us in June 2020, at about 9 months old. So that was a challenge in itself. There's a newborn. We can't get our family support. We couldn't have anyone round to the house. Unless you lived in Downing Street, then you could have everyone round all the time. So we couldn't have anyone round. We really struggled with that kind of bringing on a child who had been through a challenging birth scenario into our family in those restricted conditions was really, really challenging. That's without going into the work thing as well, like furlough scheme, like rules being changed on a whim with no notice and no guidance or very little guidance. So it was really challenging at work, really challenging at home. And I ended up, it took me a year, but I started having panic attacks, and I was panicking every day, vomiting every day, retching every day. Every time I thought about work, I would have a panic attack, and eventually I had a breakdown. And that's partly because I'm a boy and I didn't want to ask for help. And I didn't want to ask for directions. I thought I should have all the answers, right? I'm a man in theory, and I'm supposed to know this stuff. I'm supposed to know how to run a business and how to be it, but you don't get classes in all of this. So yeah. And it all got too much, and I had a breakdown and got some help from the Chartered Accountants Benevolent Association, which was really, really helpful. It was kind of like the emergency services talking me off a cliff. Like I wasn't contemplating anything dark and like that extreme, but it was really like I had to disconnect from work for 6 months. I couldn't do it. So I had to find people to come and work in my business and pretend to be me. And it was just, it was so hard. But that coupled with everything that had happened years before, kind of added to my introspection, my self-analysis, if you like, to understand the point of me at a much deeper level. Like, all of this is happening. There must be a reason for it, or there must be a lesson. And so I kept exploring, and I've kind of ended up where I am today, where I can say, because of all of those experiences, I need to say this without using a swear word. Capitalism is rubbish, and it's going to harm us all. It's my personal belief based on all of my experiences to date. And one of the reasons that we were going to talk about, one of the things that we were going to talk about today was the word legacy. And here's one I made earlier. I didn't make this, but this book, I don't know whether you can see that. So Legacy by James Kerr. I read it probably 15 years ago. I love rugby. And so I love the All Blacks because they are the greatest sports team. And there were loads of lessons in that that just made me think, yeah, we're doing this wrong, aren't we? And when I looked at any social problems, like homelessness is a political choice. There isn't enough money for people to be put into safe, secure accommodation. That's a political choice. And whenever I looked at anything, like children in care is one of my things, and that is quite an important subject to me. Money could help that. So the fact that that isn't being helped is a political choice, is that there isn't enough money being diverted to the right places. So maybe money, or the things that it that controls it, the levers that of power, are things that need to be changed, because there is so much unfairness and injustice and challenging situations in the world that could be rectified, but they're not being rectified. So I, as an accountant, it's really, really contradictory, because I can very easily say I am an anti-capitalist accountant and I want a better world for us all. And I think that world is beyond capitalism. But I don't know how we get there. But I'm exploring that. So part of my now, part of my journey is about understanding what business needs to be. What's it for? Like, what I've done, the what am I for? And I think I've got a really good idea of what I'm here for. Now I need to understand what's the point of my work and all of that sort of stuff. And so I want to build a better, cleaner, gleaner, greener, safer, healthier, happier world for us all. And I personally believe that that is beyond business as usual. Even ethical capitalism is still capitalism. It's in the title. So just because you're doing things in a nicer way, it's still part of the system that supports that unfairness and division and all of those hardships and those deprivations that so many of us around the world have.
Oh, my God.
That was a lot, sorry.
It's no, it's thank you for being so honest and sharing that. There I know for sure that there'll be people in the group who relate to it, and I was in care when I was a child, and I really respect you for fostering, and the reason that I think my husband maybe feels differently about it. He obviously hasn't had that experience, but I think that the work to become a foster carer is so beyond what I'm prepared to put myself through, that that's the reason that I don't feel I can do that. And there is so much here that I've got so many like personal things that I've never shared on the podcast here, about how things just don't work. Like, there, where I live, there are 3,000 people on the housing register. I used to volunteer on the soup run in Bristol for like homeless people. There are empty buildings. Bristol is full of empty buildings. And there are people on the streets, and there are people who are queuing up for food. And I can't understand it. I've got a relative with mental health problems who, if I could move them nearer to me, I could take strain off of the social security system with care support. But there isn't a scheme that allows transfers of people between counties because of the waiting list. It is unbelievably ridiculous. Yeah. And as somebody who's, I see, like, I've worked really hard to get out of my child, like potentially what my childhood should have meant for my future. The only way to do that is to chase capitalism.
Yeah.
And that is like, do you see what I mean? And I think that they're like, they become these goals which are set by, if you do this, it will be okay. But that means that you instantly have massive inequality, and they're a big problem. So how does that, in terms of your client base, like, what do you, you know, this, I see that this must divide? Like, I know, like, it's a niching is great. We love a niche, but I guess that not everyone loves you in the nicest possible way.
No. And even people who say that they're running green and ethical businesses have been repelled by the change in my attitude, particularly on LinkedIn. I'm fairly vocal and I like to provoke people. That's why I've got a ridiculous haircut and tattoos. I like to provoke people to think about things and I'd like to challenge the status quo. And so, yeah, we lost a number of clients, partly because I had to withdraw myself from the business. So we're now rebuilding. But as this message has, and it's not my message, it's, I believe that this is a message from Mother Nature using me as a vehicle to do something about saving our only home planet. The only thing that we all have in common is that we all need water, we all need food, we all need safe shelter, and we need love and connection. Everything else is a bonus. That's not my message. That's not some bloke off the internet. That's not Scott from Stroud. That's a message from our ancestors. And that's part of what that legacy book is about as well. It's about honoring our ancestors, but also leaving the shirt in a better place. That's one of the messages from the book. How can we enhance what we've been given? And I just look at, when I was a kid, my dad would take us on caravanning holidays and he'd get to the campsite and the windscreen would be covered in bugs. Who has to clean bugs off their windscreens now? Where have all the bugs gone? That's not an enhancement. That's not leaving a positive legacy. That's us consuming. And it's just not right. So yeah, I'm conflicted in my day job, cranking the handle and feeding the machine, which is really, really hard. But I've found a way to do something in a more positive way. I don't think it's nearly enough. So we were B Corp, and we were the first B Corp accounting firm in the UK, the first chartered B Corp accounting firm. But even that, it's a closed club, and there are issues with B Corp that I've been quite public about. And I've kind of developed my own way of running a better business, an ethical, sustainable and impactful business, based on what I've learned over the last 7 years and what I feel in my bones and in my body. And to understand how to run something that fits within the capitalist model but isn't part of it is really, really hard.
Yeah, so. It feels like it's such a big, big thing. Can you explain to us, Scott, what B Corp is?
So they'll have a party line, and this might not be the party line because I'm not in that party anymore. I've uninvited myself. But the B Corporation movement essentially is a group of individuals trying to use their business as a powerful force for good in the world. So it's about considering your impact on people and planet as well as profit. My argument is actually profit doesn't matter. What matters is people and planet. If we don't have a home and we don't have people, like, you can't touch the economy. You can't bring me a slice of the economy. You can bring me a person and I can do something with a person. We can touch each other. We can hug. We can feed each other. You can't do that with the economy. The economy doesn't need saving. It's people that need saving. And so the idea that you can make better decisions for people and planet is a great start and it's a good stepping stone. But for me, that B Corporation movement is just the stepping stone. It's the start of something. It's a journey to a cleaner, greener, healthier, happier, safer world for us all. And all, like, male, female, brown, white, it doesn't, all of us, until all of us are safe, then none of us are safe. And we all should have a bare minimum standard of those four things. We need safe water, we need safe, healthy, nutritious food, we need somewhere safe to live, and we need love and connection. And that's it.
So you didn't renew your B Corp membership as a, that's, how did you feel about that as a sort of external mark, I guess, that, like, for the lay person, you know, I see my, I don't know, small washing machine things come through the post and be B Corp or, you know, those kind of things. And yeah. Like, that to me as a, like, tick in the box, but I'm obviously not understanding anything beyond that as a random member of the population.
Yeah. So we attracted a number of clients that were B Corp, and people watching this, we're accountants and bookkeepers. We are really, really good at understanding what a business actually does, what it means. Like, the marketing is the marketing, right? But when you look at someone's numbers, you get a real understanding for what they're actually doing. there were too many instances in my experience where what the numbers were saying was different from what the marketing was saying. And so, and I'm cynical. I'm an accountant, right? My job is to challenge and question things. And so I couldn't, it was kind of like being guilty by association. There were things that I didn't see, that I saw that I didn't approve of, and I just didn't want to be part of it anymore. And I think there's a better way. Now, that's not taking anything away from B Corp. It is an amazing movement, but it's just the beginning. And I think we need to go further and we need to go faster, because otherwise, with all the storms that are happening now, Mother Nature's going to come and she's going to say, right, you've had your chance. I'm finishing this silly game and we're going to start again. And I would much rather we were in control of our future rather than being subject to what Mother Nature might do to us.
Mm. Wow, give me lots to think about. And can I ask you, Scott, what does life for you on a personal work, being dad, look like? And how do you manage your mental health, burnout, running a business, you know, everything that's sent you, except for the pandemic, but we're still, you know, you're still dealing with clients and everything. Everything that sent you into that spiral is still around you in some way, shape or form. You've got your children, you've got your business, you know, there's always going to be issues. What have you learned about yourself to deal with day to day? And now you've got this big, massive, like, thing that you feel like you're out there doing. That's like a big weight on your shoulders. How do you manage your health?
Badly, honestly. It's a lot. And managing my own personal expectations. I'm really, really stubborn. I'm really impatient. And my wife will probably agree with this. I think I'm right, like, quite a lot. So I kind of get carried away and I get excited and I want the prize at the end of the road. And I'm going to get it. I am going to find a better way for us to live in harmony with nature. It's going to be hard, but something shifted in between these, in my head, in probably 2022, that I'm hesitating because I can't say this without swearing. So I'm going to think of another way of swearing, of saying it without swearing. It was to just say, do you know what? It doesn't matter. All the things that, like, what my LinkedIn post today was that there's no such thing as an accounting emergency. And there isn't. Like, things happen and either you're prepared for them or you're not. There's no emergency. So I've started trying to make, and it's really hard, trying to care less about things that aren't actually important and trying to care more about the right things. In terms of my own kind of daily practice, I meditate. I had a cold shower. I was so nervous about today that I had a cold shower for the first time in 2 weeks. And I love cold showers. And I journal every day as well. And I'd noticed that I hadn't had a cold shower for 2 weeks. So I had a cold shower in preparation for today, which is a bit of a weird thing to say. But I exercise every day. So I either walk or cycle the boys to school, either school or nursery. And I usually finish so that I can be at home in that after school before dinner period so that we can have fun and do family things. And so I'm kind of controlling. One of the big things for me was working all the time. During the pandemic, I was at the kitchen table and my laptop was always on. And then I was asleep at the kitchen table and I'd wake up and go again. Like, it was just bonkers for me. I managed that period really badly. But yeah, so one of the big things is shutting my laptop or turning the computer off and then going home and having that separation. And so my office is the biggest cost, other than humans, my office is the biggest cost that we have, but it's the most important because it means I can have that separation. And I've got all these little tools and tricks and support as well, networks, having people. Like today, I asked a group of people whether I should wear my pink polo shirt or my blue polo shirt. And so, it's friends, right? It's connection, it's love. And that's the biggest thing that has changed for me. And 2024, so 2023 was me putting myself back together and learning all those things about what makes me tick. This year is about what makes us tick. Like, how can we do the best for us? And that's community. And I'm now, that's what I want in my heart and in my head, probably in my gut as well. I'm a feeder. So I love to, like, food is my love language. And so I want to cook for people. And so that's what I'm going to try and do this year. And I don't know how that works when you're an accountant, but I'm going to figure it out. I don't know if I answered the question.
Joe's the feeder as well. So like, you guys to meet up.
Fever and cold showers. That's me. So, like, yep. This connection. Cool.
No, I think, you know what, like you said, you hadn't coped well in the pandemic. I mean, that was really hard. Like, you know, that was a really hard time. Our experience of it was being at home. My husband said he probably worked like he spent 20 hours a day in our bedroom because he worked in there and slept in there. And that's not good for anyone's mental health. And, you know, little children around, it was a really tough time. I decided that actually work wasn't for me at that point. And so, you know, you've just got to do what you've got to do. It was completely unexpected. But I suppose one of the things, I don't know, this is a tricky one, but the decisions that we made, like at that time, the decisions that weren't made by us, that were made by the country, by the government and the world's governments, was that this was a right approach to be able to sort of stop this thing from spreading. And isn't it amazing how the power gets taken out of our hands and actually we can't do anything in that situation? And I'm just thinking about the like anxiety that comes with that when you actually can't control it. You've got to find other ways to cope. And I suppose you were just saying about there not being an emergency, it's just about how prepared you are for things. And in terms of your journey and what you've learned about mental health and taking care of yourself, thinking about, well, you know, we now know that is a possibility. Let's hope that doesn't happen in the future, but we've seen it happen. What can we learn from that? And what do we have in our toolkit? So if we were faced with that kind of situation or some other outside of our control situation came to us, how would we be ready for it?
Yeah, and we learn through experience and sharing stories. And through that time, speaking personally, I didn't trust our government. I don't think that they did the right things. I don't think they did things quickly enough, allowing Cheltenham Festival to go on. Anyway, it's politics. We shouldn't talk about that. So, there's something about when you're told something that you feel is wrong, and that insecure or that uneasiness is really, really challenging to cope with. And when we were constantly told things all the time, it was really, really hard. And I really didn't cope very well with it, but I've been through that experience and I survived. And so I'm now better prepared. I was going to say when the next one happens, but let's say if, because that would be nice to be positive, wouldn't it?
Can we talk about the environment a bit, Scott? Joe and I came off of we were running a webinar this morning, and we've been talking about AI a lot and automation and how we grow business. Because, you know, you've got a small team, everyone that we're working with is growing they have aspirations to be a six-figure bookkeeper and that's probably another conversation about capitalism and money goals. But you know, we're always thinking about how do I have more time for myself? How do I build this business to achieve the goals I have, whatever they look like, without burning out? And one of the big opportunities we've got right now is automation and AI. We see it every day, and I think there's no escaping that it's part of a lot of the software that we use. We ChatGPT, I'm sorry to say, open in a browser and I'll run things through ChatGPT frequently throughout the day. And I think that we have to accept this is part of what's happening going forward. But we say it's free, use it because it's free, or it's $19.99 or whatever you pay for your subscription, but actually it isn't free. And from an environmental point of view, I hadn't really considered that until coming onto this conversation with you.
So it's really interesting, isn't it? Because capitalism, the model, doesn't price a value for nature. And that's why you can fly to Scotland for 20 quid and it takes 10 times that, more than that, to get the train from where I am. That it's the model assumes that nature is free and endless. And we don't live on a finite, we live on a finite planet. Like, there is an end to the resources that we have at our fingertips. And we don't cost them at all under the capitalist model. So years ago, probably 3 years ago, someone sent me a message, and I really wish I kept it. It was a picture, and it was a guy sitting at his computer saying, "Don't worry, it's all in the cloud." And then someone else saying, "Don't worry, it's all in the cloud." And someone else saying, "Don't worry, it's all in the cloud." And then all of those cloud things were feeding into another computer. And the title underneath was, one person's cloud is another person's computer. It's just another computer somewhere else. And if we're all doing everything in the cloud, then somehow there's going to be a massive server farm. And we know this, like these things exist, that is using energy, that is using water to keep it cool, that is using resource, that is using land, and we're going to need land to grow food at some point. So is that the best use of our time, of our energy, of our money? And is that the proper thing to be doing? And I'm not going to say don't use ChatGPT. I'll say it once we finish the call. But I'm looking at how can I be more human? And to me, automation, things like coding your receipts and sending them into Xero or other softwares are available. I guess we can't endorse particular things. But using machine learning in that way is great. But at what point? Well, like, where does it end? And so if my colleague, my bookkeeper colleague, if she doesn't have a job to do because all of the tasks that she does that she's really good at, that she spent years getting good at, are replaced by machines, what's she going to do? Am I going to just sack her? And so we have policies around using the appropriate amount of technology, using the right technology. We don't outsource. We don't offshore. We create jobs for people, for humans. And that's part of our impact, is creating a meaningful employment for somebody who lives in our hometown. And that to me is more important than AI. Plus, anyone apart from today worked really well. But usually when I go into an online call like this, there are some sorts of technology problems. And I think it's because the robots know I don't like them. And usually that's what happens. There's always a hiccup. But today that didn't happen. But yeah. So I think AI is part of our journey as a species, but I think it's very quickly going to be put behind us, I hope. And we're going to go back to that human heart-to-heart connection.
I couldn't agree anymore. I mean, we obviously have a large community of bookkeepers, and there are often people saying, well, am I going to be replaced? But that's why we often say about it's not about the doing, it's about how having those conversations. I grew up as a bookkeeper, hiding behind the computer, hiding behind the desktop computer, hiding behind the software, hiding behind the big old paper streams of audit, reams of paper, and like not talking to anyone, but just like ticking boxes and saying whether they passed the audit or whatever. And my business and my impact has grown on other businesses by helping them understand what the numbers mean. And that's what bookkeepers, they need to have more conversations. We need to have more, you know, and like you say, community, exactly that. When I realized I burnt out in business and was ill, I didn't have any friends who understood what it was to try and run a business and try and look after so many people. And so I've always felt like employees and team members feel like extra children to me, because that's how much of a responsibility I feel for them. And it really weighs heavy on your shoulders. And then, so I completely get that the human aspect, we need to embrace that. And I think we were talking this morning about the trends for the year. And how, you know, networking is like some kind of retro thing we used to do back in the day, because everyone does everything online and social media. And we're like, you know, that thing that you think like you used to do in the 80s, like you need to get out there. You need to start talking to people and having real confident conversations and having those connections. So I couldn't agree more. I feel like, and we've been talking about things like, you know, we send our new members a card in the post and like handwritten. Mm. Like there's something about doing things in a different way that without using. So, and I love that you say that you use it responsibly. Mm-hmm. And
because we can't escape it, right? We can't get away from it. So the way that we use it here is to be as beneficial as possible without being negatively impactful. And that's tricky. But sorry, I just interrupted, but I was reminded of a story. I don't know whether you know about the Mexican fisherman talking to a businessman. So there's a Mexican fisherman
this week on TikTok, but it's a great story. Tell me.
So I'm going to butcher it now because I don't know it properly. I don't know it well enough. So Mexican fishermen, and it could be Brazilian, it could be Chinese, it could be like, it doesn't matter. Indigenous fishermen sitting on a riverbank, fishing, catching fish, and a businessman. And in the story that I read, it's Mexican and American, because America, capitalism, right? So the businessman says, how many fish are you catching today? And he said, well, just enough for me and my family. I'm going to sell a couple. I'm going to give a couple to my neighbors and I'm going to eat the rest. And the businessman says, well, that's great. But what if you got two rods Or what if you got a bloke to help you, or girl, equal opportunities fishermen. What if you got a boat? You could catch so many fish and then you could sell those fish and you'd have a load of money. And the fisherman says, yeah. And then what? And the man says, well, then you could get a business. You could have a premises and you could have a factory and you could catch thousands and thousands of fish a day. And you could turn that into a product that you can ship to America and you can sell it. And then you'd make a load of money. And then the fisherman says, yeah, but then what? And then the man says, well, keep going. And you'll eventually have a huge fleet of boats. And you'll have a stream of factories up and down the river. And you will make so much money that you'll be able to buy this place here. And then you'll be able to retire. And the fisherman says, yeah, and then what? And then the businessman says, well, then you can just sit on the riverbank and fish for your family. Like, so that's my point. Like, to what end is AI helpful? Is it just to get us to do more and be faster and keep the machine whirling so that we can then end up just doing nothing and sitting down and having a chat with our mates? So that's it. Like, what's the point? What's the point?
Yeah, that's it. Like, go back to basics. Why are you doing this? And it sounds like, you know, you're so clear on your values and what actually matters. And that's become part of your business as well as part of your life. And I think this is what Joe and I spend so much time talking to people about. You're building this business because you wanted to have a business for some reason, not just because you have a financial goal. Sure, we've all got to pay our bills and whatever, but there's a
for
reason
now, until we smash capitalism.
Until then, yes.
I think it's really important that we don't lose sight. Like, I very often go down the rabbit hole of, right, what can I do to make the world a better place? Hang on a minute. I still need to pay my credit card. So I lose sight of that. And where we've been through a challenge as a business, we're now rebuilding. And I'm this voice that I'm using today, this person that is speaking today, is very different to the person from a year ago. And I'm really clear on a message. And it does alienate people. To go back to one of the earlier questions, we lost some clients because they didn't like the extreme view that we took about them banking with Barclays. And Barclays is the worst bank for funding fossil fuel projects in the UK. So they didn't like being challenged. And I challenged them every quarter. Every quarter we had a meeting and they didn't like that challenge. So they walked away. Rather than change their actions, they walked away. And that was hard to take. And so we've definitely alienated people. And me being, I was going to say unwell, but just absent from the business, clients didn't like that because it was my business. And that was a real challenge. It was really nice that they wanted me, but I wasn't around. I couldn't, there wasn't any of me to go around. So yeah, I think it's really important to understand what we're here for. And for me, this journey that I'm on now is going to alienate people, and that's fine. Like, you don't need everyone to like you. You need some people to love you.
Yeah, definitely. Someone said in the comments, and someone's asked what the best bank is, but I'm going to ask you a slightly different question. I'm going to ask you, how do you decide which bank is the right fit for you? Because obviously you can only really make the decision for your own business, but what are you looking for when you're looking for a bank?
One with branches? No, they don't exist anymore, do they? So there's a website called bank.green, and we can all go and do this now. We could all go onto our little internet pocket phone thing, and we could go to bank.green and we could choose our bank, put our bank in and see what it does for supporting or otherwise the fossil fuel industry. There's so much data and it's really, really easy to get lost down a rabbit hole of like trying to understand it all. So I prefer to let other people do that hard work and I just use their tools, and bank.green is one of those tools. My company has a bank with Triodos, which is a Dutch bank. They now have a UK branch, a UK banking license, and Starling, because Triodos doesn't give you a debit card for your business account, which is really annoying when you're trying to buy a coffee. So we use Starling and we use Triodos, and both of those are way up there in terms of ethical banking. They score really highly on bank.green, and that to me is good enough. Is it good? Is it great? Is it perfect? Probably not, but it's better than other high street banks that I probably shouldn't name.
And that's it. We've got to, like, we can't change everything, but what we can do, we can take those incremental steps to make things better.
Yeah. So it's about knowing kind of what questions to ask and when to ask them and where to go for answers. And so part of my work has been to build a framework, which I shared, that I think we're going to share with everyone at some point, around how to build an ethical, sustainable and impactful business. And it looks at things like how you can change your articles of association to consider your impact on people and planet. Because if you read your standard articles of association, all it cares about is shareholder wealth maximization. And that's the default setting. So what we can do is either change our own articles, and every single company in the world, in the UK, changing their articles would be incredible. And or we can support the Better Business Act, which is calling for that change. So it's going to do that work, and it's going to try and change the law. The next question becomes, who actually cares about what Companies House says and what the Companies Act says? That's a very different conversation. But then you can also look at who you work with. And as I mentioned before, who are you associated with? Are you guilty by association? Do you work with fossil fuel industry clients? And can you start changing the way that you work with clients and in your supply chain as well? Can you make different choices to get better suppliers in your supply chain? And for most of us, that's going to be a challenge because we've got software companies and we're not really in much control about what they do. But with our kind of optional spending, we could choose to prioritize local businesses or independent businesses. We could choose to boycott Amazon, which would be nice, send Amazon out of business. So there are so many things that we can do as a business. And that framework that I've built is based on my 7 years running Kung Fu Accounting. And I took a group of business owners in the accounting industry through that framework last year. And we are changing the world. There's a group of us that are making the world a better place through the choices that we make as business owners. But on a personal side as well, I think there's, sorry, I'm ranting. Do you want me to stop? Do you want to get a word in?
I was going to say, I can't wait for you to share that with, show the audience how they get access to that. It'd be amazing.
Cool. So, and that's what we can do at a business level. So there are so many choices that we are in complete control of that we kind of outsource. We don't even think about what our banks do with our money. Why don't we do that? Why don't we think about that? It's because we're not told to. We're just, you choose the bank. And then, but where's the link between my money in that bank and then what it does with it? And how does that bank make its money? We don't ask those questions. So Bank.Green asks those questions for us. But on a personal level, what actions can we all leave today with? I've got something called the 5 F's, and one of them isn't a swear word, you'll be pleased to know. So it's food, fuel, flying, fashion, and finance. And so these are the choices that we can make around things that will cover most of the things that we do in our lives. Food should be local, seasonal, and plant-based as far as possible. That would have a massive positive impact on land use, on water use, on the environmental impact of just having monoculture crops, having forests being cleared so that you can grow cows, so that you can mince them into burgers. All of that stuff is really, really important for our environment, but also for our fellow creatures, for our fellow animals. We don't why are we killing animals and eating them? It's weird. Tasty, don't get me wrong, but weird. And why are some animals tasty and why are other animals weird? Why don't we eat dogs? Or why don't we eat things that we consider pets? Why is it cows are okay and chickens are okay? I never understand that. But this is not a vegan rant. So food, eat plants, eat locally, eat seasonally. Fuel, how you get around is really, really important. And we've been isolated socially, physically by poor public transport and by people living further afield and living further from where they work as well. There being no meaningful jobs in our local towns means that people have to travel further. And because we don't have good public transport, we have to drive, or we feel like we have to drive. So if we can make different choices around whether or not we have to drive, and there's a statistic, which is something like 60% of of journeys in the UK are single occupant doing less than 3 miles. So that's you, and it used to be me, taking 2 tons of metal, a sofa, 2 armchairs, a load of high-end electronics, and liters and liters and liters of fuel to pop to the corner shop to get a loaf of bread. You can walk 3 miles. Most of us are in a position where we can walk 3 miles. And if not, we could probably cycle it. And if not, then yes, a car might be an option. But using the car as the default option is probably not the solution. So that's fuel, part of fuel. The other thing is about renewables. We just don't need to be burning fossil fuels. It's really windy at the moment. We could have a load of free wind, free energy. That would be amazing. So we need to campaign for fossil fuel to be, and the fossil fuel funding as well. The the subsidies that go into the fossil fuel industry are just, it's not a level playing field. It's really, really unfair for people who want renewable energy. So food, fuel. The next one is flying. We have thumbs, not wings. We're not supposed to fly. Just don't fly, if at all possible. And again, there will be circumstances where someone will say, I must fly. And that's absolutely fine for now, but it's not compatible with a planet of finite resources. Fashion is the next one. And clearly I know a thing or two about this. So this is my, this was a Christmas present actually from my wife. So it's from Vinted. It's pre-loved. The original garment was made, and there are questions around how it was made and where it was made. So could it have been made in a sweatshop? I don't know, but I'm prolonging its life. So it's not going into landfill. It's not going to be dumped. It's not going to be burned. I'm going to give it an extra life. So I'm getting the maximum use by buying a secondhand t-shirt and bring and buy sales, or what do they used to call them? Jumble sales. How cool were they when you were a kid, right? They could be cool again now that we're grown-ups. And then the last one is finance. And we kind of touched on that already from a business aspect, but it's about where our money is and what the banks are doing with it. And it's banks and pensions. So pensions is a hidden area, and that's a huge industry in and of itself. And it's really dark and murky. And all we need to do is to be able to shine a spotlight on those dark and murky corners to understand what they're actually doing with our money. And then we can make different choices. So food, fuel, flying, fashion, and finance. They're the five F's.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. There's so much to think about. It's really important. It's really important. Mm. And I think everyone watching this will think, what's one thing that I can change today? So thank you for coming and sharing, being so open and honest as well. I see you on LinkedIn all the time, Scott. Is that the best place to connect with you, or somewhere else?
Yeah, because I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this. I don't like Facebook, so I don't use it. I don't trust it. Don't trust the internet. LinkedIn is where I like to hang out. So I hang out on LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. Lovely. Well, look, thank you so much for being here. And thanks everyone who's listened today. It's been great to have you here. And we will see you next week for another episode of the podcast. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the Bookkeepers podcast. Why not join us in the Six Figure Bookkeepers Club at sixfigurebookkeeper.club, or visit our website, sixfigurebookkeeper.com.